Blog Talk Radio.
Today is Tuesday, November 5th, 2019. The call-in number is 347-857-3293. What are the issues in this election? What is your position on immigration, migration? Justice begins and ends with education and educational institutions. What's happening with WBAI? Join the liberation struggle. Stay informed.
Good evening, my brothers and sisters. This is Ralph Pointer. What's happening? And I begin, as always, with what I believe. This program is about political prisoners, people who saw an injustice and did something about it, confronted the state, were incarcerated in the death camps, and we work to free them. But to begin with, what I believe. The overriding element in every situation or circumstance in a black life is racism. Birth, elementary school, housing, health, food, etc. Black lives have never mattered except during slavery and other circumstances where money is being made by our laborers for others. The modern death penalty, 80% black, moved lynching indoors. The police, as the army of occupation, have taken lynching outside again. The lynch mob is the racist system, including the courts and the media, and because the lives of our heroes and sheroes who once protected us in our community do not matter to us, the people, our political prisoners are now dying in captivity. They are tortured and isolated. Only armed struggle can recreate our image in our own minds as well as the minds of others. Wake up, now is the time. Now, my brothers and sisters, as we recited what the program is about, what does one think of the upcoming election, and what are the issues? What is your position on immigration and migration? Well, to open, I'm going to make or give us a statement made by our dear sister Lynn in 2003. It was at the closing of the Guild Convention in Minneapolis. And here's a little piece of it. Looming in 2004, we have those Democratic and Republican convention, and then an election with the corporate media ready to hype the results and drown out the righteous protest. What has changed? Nothing has changed. We hear a lot of nonsense and a lot of carrying on about impeaching that racist, outrageous thief, Mr. Trump. But I say, what's the excitement? Well, he's an outrageous thief. Nobody can deny that. But the presidency, beginning with George Washington, who was an outrageous thief, and all of those who followed, and the founding fathers, all got outrageous amounts of land because they knew the value of land. In the new colonies, these guys became rich, and they have been rich for generations. But let's go to impeachment. What do you think about impeachment, and why am I not upset about what Mr. Trump has been doing? Well, I don't want to go back and talk about the history of America, but I will say Kissinger and company, with their attack on Vietnam, one of the most outrageous atrocities, most outrageous injustices, when they lied and said Vietnam posed a threat to the Americans. They posed a threat to those thieves, those thieving corporations in America that wanted to profit from Vietnam. And the Vietnamese people said no and fought a war. And I don't hear anyone talking about, while there were some people who said we should put Kissinger in jail, Kissinger cannot travel freely because there are countries where if he were to enter, he would be arrested immediately. And we have Mr. Reagan, the Iran-Contra. Remember the good Marine Ollie North? While they were going behind the back of the American people and the American president, Mr. Carter, they went to a foreign government to have them keep the hostages until after the election, and so that Mr. Reagan could win the election. Is that not an offense that should be punished? And we have Ollie North, that millionaire, sitting with all of the money they made and the debts of all of those young men and people in the American inner cities with that drug called crack, a derivative of cocaine that destroyed communities and made millions for people, enabled America to buy weapons outside of the government. And I ask you, is that not an offense that should be punished? And then we go to Mr. Bush and Blair to lie to the world. Look at all of the death and destruction they caused in Iraq. Now everybody knows it's a lie. And they put people in jail who told about the lie, how they planned to lie to the world. Remember Colin Powell and his speech in the UN? Is that not criminal behavior? Trump, who was making money, his family, around the world. That is a terrible thieving thing. But I think of the Clintons and Haiti. Need I say more? Where are the billions the Clintons stole? And then let's go to Mr. Biden. His family is making money overseas because of who he is. I forget how many thousands, 10,000 a month his son is making in a position that he knows less about it than I do, and I know nothing about what they're doing there. And it, the beat goes on and on. It's the pots calling the kettles black. And as for Mr. Trump, who loves to touch women and abuse women, I say, well, when is America going to have equal rights for women? I'm not talking about black women. I'm talking about white women, equal pay for equal work. And how about women's right to control their own bodies? And I could go on and on and on. And so, therefore, a pox on both of their houses. 2, 4, 6, 8. Who do we hate? The Democrats, the Republicans, and all of those clowns, because all of them are lying to the American people. But I could go on, but I will not go on. I'm going to open up the phone to Sister Nellie Bailey. Would we get to that number quickly? Here it is, 5397. Your mic is open, 5397. Hello.
Well, thank you very, very much, Ralph. And as usual, your lead-in laying out the broadest context for our struggle and fight for liberation, and all in the intersectionality of all of these issues that you lay out every week is very, very important, because they cannot be compartmentalized. They are all intrinsically linked. And I'd just like to say pretty quickly about impeachment. What we're seeing, as Malcolm said when he commented on the U.S. assassination of its president, President Kennedy, and the CIA involvement in the murder and torture of Patrice Lumumba, Malcolm said the chickens have come home to roost. And I think that is appropriate for today's the battle between the two swamps, that is the Democratic Party and the Republican Party. Joe Biden and his son, Hunter, are up to their ears in corruption in the Ukraine. He wasn't getting $50,000 a month, I understand. It was $60,000 a month and much more from there. And with China, it was millions and millions of dollars. But even the European press and the press in Ukraine is talking about the fact that other leading political figures in the U.S. had their sons and daughters involved in that. And we have to remember about the Ukraine Undersecretary of State Victoria Nuland. Remember when she bragged about how the U.S. spent $5 billion to overthrow the democratically elected government in Ukraine. And who did she work in collaboration with? But the neo-Nazis, the supporters of Hitler. The Wall Street Journal carried an in-depth story, and I think we should really applaud Milton Amamati of the Black Star News for first reporting on this. One of the things that the neo-Nazis did was to unfurl, among other flags and neo-Nazi symbols, but the Confederate flag. That's what they did. And these are the people that the U.S. went in league with or tapped as their allies in the overthrow of the Ukraine government. The Ukraine government is now so corrupt until it's not funny. And to laundry the money, they go through Greece, They have a whole route set up how they are laundering the money. And the oligarchs in the Ukraine, their best buddy is Hillary Clinton. They gave the Clinton Foundation millions of dollars. But anyway, I am to talk about the Congressional Black Caucus. They just held their weekend, their caucus, their conference in mid-September of this year. Now, the Congressional Black Caucus is the epitome of the Black misleadership class, the epitome of it. Now, why do we say that? And Glenn Ford, I think in 2017 or 2018, I think it was 17, wrote an article on the Congressional Black Caucus. And he wrote it within the historical context of Dr. Martin Luther King, then against militarism, then against greed, capitalism, and of course, what was the third one? So anti-war, and then anti-war. So maybe I missed one. Well, anyway, the point is, let's look at the Congressional Black Caucus. Now, remember when they first started, you know, Dellums and all those people were on board. There were only 7 members. And by 2017, it was 44, and it's even more now. So what has their record been? Now, remember, the Congressional Black Caucus was established to look out for, promote, and enact legislations and programs that would protect the African-American community, the Black community. I don't even like African-Americans saying that, the Black community. But what have they done since they've been there? They voted in favor of Trump's $770 billion war budget. They voted for and supported military hardware to local police departments. That's what they did. These are the things that they have done. They voted and supported Obama's invasion or attack against Libya. They supported Obama's giveaway trillions of dollars. We're not talking about, no, we're talking about trillions of dollars to bail out the banks. This is what the Congressional Black Caucus has done. They are servants to the ruling class. They are servants to the U.S. war machine. They are servants to the U.S. banking interest that represents the epitome of capitalist exploitation. This is our Congressional Black Caucus, and they're not getting any better. They are becoming even worse. And now that we have the deaths of Conyers, and I know the Me Too movement, which, by the way, was started by a Black woman and not white women, the Me Too movement has condemned Conyers completely, as if his entire political life is gone in that moment. And yes, there were settlements of sexual harassment. Yes. I that is true. But that is not the sum total of who Conyers was, who even admitted that he has socialist tendency. So how do we begin to equate these, or can we at all, these contradictions, and how do we begin to look at them? Ralph is much better at this than I am, but I think we need to take a deep breath on this. And now we have Cummins. I mean, they have made this, and I do not speak derisively of the dead, but you would have thought, watching his funeral, because that is just how corrupt and rotten the Democratic Party is, because they want to garner black votes off that spectacular funeral and service that they had for Cummins, and of course his wife. I mean, I'm just making a political point here. I'm not being derogatory or anything like that. But obviously the woman was putting in her bid to run for her husband's seat. And let's tell the truth, as we did in Black Agenda Report. What the hell has this man done for Baltimore? And how it has languished in this community crisis for decades. I mean, you know, come on. I mean, Trump's criticism of him, that idiot, I mean, we shouldn't look at that. We should look at the material conditions on the ground for black people in Baltimore. That's really the issue. Why is Cummins voting for the police to have military hardware from the U.S. Army? Why does a local police station need that? And who could be as bad as Baltimore? I shouldn't say who should be as bad, because they all are. But I think it's food for thought in terms of the overall and general context that Ralph has given us to show and demonstrate concretely the intersectionality of all of these issues and the crisis that we are confronting. And we have to be critical of the black misleadership class.
Well, thank you, Ralph, so much for that, Bailey. We can always count on you for information. Would you like to finish up now? Or are you finished?
Yeah, I would like to say one thing. Please read Black Agenda Report. We recently celebrated our 13th anniversary. Please go to our site, read Black Agenda Report. There is no other analysis beside that of Black Agenda Report. I co-host Black Agenda Radio with Glenn Ford. And please, please visit our website. You will not be disappointed. And we will open your mind to new analysis, information from a black left perspective. And I urge everyone, if you can, please visit our website, blackagendareport.com.
He said often, the Black Agenda Report, please go to it. And I remind everyone, if I may, hypocrisy, thy name is America. And as Glenn Ford has pointed out, and I use my own words to say, the cowardly caucus of congressmen of color in the government that supported the crack laws and every other regressive act against people of color. Thank you so much for that, Nellie Bailey. Next up is 8367. Your mic is open. 8367. Tom, your mic is open.
Hello, everybody. I'd like to give my take on the today's election that actually been going on for quite a while. With early voting. First of all, I went to vote, and I was today, and I was the only voter there. I predict that much less than 10% of those eligible to vote will not have that less than 10% will have voted in this election, and I believe that this is not because people didn't know about it. This was well advertised. We all were sent information from the Board of Elections about the candidates and the ballot questions, and New York won. had debates. So most people knew about this. So, but I think that they, in the main, realized that in all probability, this election really doesn't mean anything. I consider the whole thing a sham. In fact, I recommend that not to vote for any of the public advocate candidates. Jermaine Williams, a Democrat, is the most likely to win among the three candidates. He says that he is for government transparency and accountability and wants to prevent gun violence, but offers no specifics how to accomplish these goals. And he also claims he wants to address the housing crisis. This is a quote from him regarding sufficient housing for low and moderate income and homeless New Yorkers. Quote, we cannot force communities to change overnight, but we slowly have to figure this thing out. although he says that he has not received any money from the real estate lobby, he also admitted that he has a close relationship with the president of the New York Real Estate Board. So there you go about Jermaine Williams. Now, the Republican conservative candidate, Joseph Borelli, I believe he's from Staten Island, he has no program. It's just a slogan. Stop the de Blasio agenda. That's his program, whatever that means. The Libertarian candidate, Devin Balkind, he recommends that we have a citywide directory for social services and digital transformation of city agencies, tech-enabled and MTA and NYCHA. But none of these three, with the exception of the Libertarian, with his tech approach to information, deal with any specifics. And then we have the election for district attorney of Queens. Now I'm going to check my notes here. Just a second. Here we go. I'll be with you in a second. Okay. So,
I don't want to jump in and give you anything or to steal your thunder. Okay. Go ahead.
So besides the election for public advocate, the voters in Queens will have voted for a district attorney. Melinda Katz, the Democratic candidate, has been the Queensborough president, but she has no courtroom experience. She's a machine Democrat. She does advocate closing Rikers, but as far as I can find out, she has not supported the appointment of a special prosecutor in case police excessive use of force or brutality. Joe Murray, the Republican candidate, actually is a registered Democrat. He's a former New York City policeman, and he's presently a lawyer. He's against closing Rikers Island. I'm not sure what either of these candidates, what their stands are about the Civilian Complaint Review Board. Now let's go to these ballot questions. Now, despite the testimony of the Charter Revision Commission hearing, the commission worded the first two main ballot proposals, which appeared on the back of the voting ballot, in such a way that there are no significant changes in this ranked choice voting ballot question and in the Civilian Complaint Review Board from the systems we have now. As far as ranked choice voting goes, most of the testimony at the commission's hearing called for ranked choice voting to apply to all the general elections here in New York City. This will not be the case. It will only apply to these a special election like the one we had today or to primary elections for mayor, borough presidents, and the New York City Council. Which is really a very limited use of ranked choice voting. I won't go into the details of what ranked choice voting really means, but it does give third parties a chance to not to be characterized as spoilers. You have a when you vote, you vote for up to five choices, and if the first choice doesn't, if any candidate does not get at least 50% of the vote, then you go into this ranked choice voting. And then we have the Civilian Complaint Review Board question. Now here again, at the Charter Revision Commission hearing, almost everybody wanted the this review board to be elected by the public. But of course, that's not the way the this ballot question is worded. Instead, the board will be increased from 13 to 15 members. One will be appointed by the public advocate, one jointly appointed by the mayor and the speaker of the council, and the rest will be appointed by the New York City Council, just as the situation is today. The board will continue to depend on the district attorney to enforce any subpoenas that the board might issue. The board will not determine any punishment. It will be done the way it is now. The punishment will be determined by the New York City Police Commissioner. And by the way, we now have a new the old police commissioner resigned, and we have a new one now. So the board will continue to depend upon the mayor for its budget. So that means that this Civilian Complaint Review Board is not really a reform. It has not been significantly strengthened. How can we vote for these candidates in ballot questions when they really do not represent the interests of the majority of New York City residents? And therefore, I recommend that we do not vote for any of the three public advocate candidates or the two candidates for district attorney, and that we vote against the two main ballot questions, ranked choice voting and the police, the Civilian Complaint Review Board, that we vote against those two because it's just window dressing. And And what about the judges? Do you know that the judges that will be elected, all of them have been agreed upon previously by the Democrats and Republicans? All of the judges have no opposition whatsoever. Why even vote for them? They're going to get in automatically. Now, if this is just another example of the sham of so-called democracy that we have, not only here in the city, but throughout the country. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for that report, Tom. We can always go to you for the facts. Tom has been an activist in the Green Party for many a moon, and he gets his work done. So we need a little to lighten up a little bit with our information. So we're going to go to 8728. Professor Louis, give us some words of wisdom. Lighten our night with wonderful information with rhythm. Go ahead, Professor Louis.
You got it, Ralph. It's anybody's guess, but more or less, this is a story about whiteness. And my skin, you know, is white as snow. I take it with me everywhere I go, and what I got is not a passing phase. I'm white 24 hours a day, and wherever I go, I hope I show I already know. It don't make me high, and it don't make me low, but if you try, you can't deny what you see with your sight. You get a softer life if your skin is white. Your neighborhood slicker, get a bank loan quicker, they sell better liquor. The school bus comes, the subway runs, the work gets done, the potholes fixed, the criminals licked, the IRS tricked, the garbage picked up, the library fixed up, the streetlight kept up, the playground swept up. We get less fake cheap drugs, less cucarachas and bugs, less 9mm slugs. You get a better house, better job, even better health, better business, better money and wealth. And if you wonder what keeps white on top, check who gets stopped by the highway cop. Because anyone who looks sees white people got the biggest crooks, corporate billionaires who cook the books. But if you're going to bring just one thing, you know for sure, black people are going to jail much more. So you could like it or dislike it, but it's a fact. Not everything comes from the way you act. All over the world, they let you in by the color of your money and the color of your skin. And the lighter and whiter get an easier way. But what's the whole story, Morning Glory? What can you say and who can you name? Who is it that really runs the game? If you looked, you saw. White people get a little more. But if you look behind the door, it's rich white people who it's really all for. And when the white working guy blames the guy who's black, the rich guy laughs all the way to the bank. Because all over the world, Jim, and the money's pouring in, lied and justified by the color of the skin. They're just dark people, so we don't pay them a lot. Bring them war and take what they got and gone with the breeze. When all those jobs go overseas, the black and the white working guy feel the squeeze. And like I said, the white guy got a little ahead, but when he fights the war, he's just as dead. Salute the flag and do your duty, but keep one eye on the kid with the hoodie. It's a fact, Jack. It's no fun to act. Always checking behind your back. Blame everything on the brown and the black while the rich guy laughs all the way to the bank. And my skin, you know, is white as snow. I take it with me everywhere I go, and what I got is not a passing phase. I'm white 24 hours a day, and sure enough, how'd all this stuff begin? Where we don't like someone from the color of the skin. Where'd the whole thing come from? Did a white guy curse a black guy's mom? Black guy curse him back, and it was on. Well, I hate to tell you, but I gotta say, it didn't really happen that way. Start up the pump right from the jump. It was kind of crummy. Just a whole slick trick to pick up big money. It starts out with owners and slaves. Right to the grave, it has never, ever gone away. The owner gave the poor white guy just a little more. told him maybe one day you'll be the big boss, made him foreman, overseer, manager, cop, just to help keep the rich guy on top. You get a little extra. You think the big guys are generous. They get you to do stuff against your own interest. And I pray today nobody plays me for a clown to help the same people who are putting me down. Because white gets a break most of the time, but white still stands on the unemployment line. And you thank the bank, the landlord, they throw you a bone, but they still throw white people out of their home. And that white soldier who fought the war, what's he eating out the garbage for? And if white is up there so high and mighty, why you need three jobs to feed your family? White, black, brown, red, and yellow, it's always been the same. Divide and conquer is the name of the game. And if you think people's color is your problem, you got some problems, but you will never solve them. And when you throw the blame down on the brown and the black, the rich guy laughs all the way to the bank. And what takes and makes all this mess and division is called institutionalized racism. The cops, the DA, the judge, the jail, the law, the politicians without fail, the big banks and corporations, the newspaper and the TV stations. It's not deep down in you. It's not deep in me. It's way down deep in our society where whites got to fight black, brown, red, and yellow, forever battling down here below, while high as the sky up in the office tower, filthy rich white guys hold the money and the power. And now you don't got to guess, more or less, this was a story about whiteness. And you could look in a good book. Don't take it from me. It's only the truth that will set us free in the mosque, the synagogue, by the church steeple. Deep down the bottom, we're all just people. And no matter what your place, someday you got to face, there is only one human race. And no matter where you run under the sun, this whole world belongs to everyone. And my skin, you know, is still white as snow. I still take it with me everywhere I go. And what I got is not a passing phase. I'm still white 24 hours a day. But it's okay to say from here to kingdom come, white don't got to make me dumb. And I hope my color don't make me too soft to let greedy rich white guys rip me off. And wherever I go, I hope I show, I already know, it don't make you high and it don't make you low.
All righty. I love it. I love it. I love it. Hey, we get educated, entertained at the same time. We're going to extend the program another half hour because we have so many voices that must be heard this evening. And so we are going, thank you, Professor Louie. And if you want that, contact us. We have to get this show on the road. I want to hear young people out there quoting Professor Louie raps. And we are going to go next to 3933. Gwen Goodwin. Gwen, your mic is open.
Good evening, everybody. I'm happy for a lot of the information I got tonight. I just wanted to say I wasn't able to get on the show last week, and the thing that was really on my mind last week was that I could not find anyone that could tell me what Elijah Cummings died of. And it's pretty interesting that a very, very public figure dies, but nobody has any idea of what he died of. And I Google it, and I couldn't find anything about the cause of his death. I just was able to ascertain information about his funeral and his career. I called people and I asked them. They said they didn't know. I looked for newspapers and nobody knew. And it's very strange to me. You know, even when my husband died, the first thing people said to me, well, what did he die of? And so this is a really public figure, and as far as I can tell, he went in for something with his knee, and he comes out dead. And it just was very strange to me. And then I thought, you know, John Conyers dying 1 week after that was, you know, a very incredible coincidence. You know, what luck for the Trump administration. And I am going to comment on what Ralph was saying about Trump and his deeds. You know, Trump keeps saying that the reason why he should be allowed to do the things he's done is because everybody else does it. But, you know, if your kids came home and said, you know, everyone was spray painting the building, so I decided to do that, would you tell your kids, well, that was okay because everybody else does it? I don't buy that because everybody else does it, that it makes it okay. And I think President Clinton was definitely not my favorite president, but he also was impeached, and he was impeached for something that was ridiculous. I mean, you know, having an affair is a ridiculous reason to be impeached. He probably should have been impeached for the crimes that happened with, you know, his not-for-profit, which is stuffed to the hilt with money. But that didn't happen. But I still think that that Trump is just so far over the line in so many ways, and I do think he's very dangerous. So I don't want to see him squeak by with anything more. I personally am fine with if he gets impeached. He probably won't, but I think he's a terrible president. I think he's a terrible example. And although I don't want to go to war with Russia any more than anybody else does, I think that there's got to be a different way of doing this. And, I am not for Trump being able to just get away with whatever he wants. And he has gotten away with everything, including rape, the rape of a 13-year-old girl. And I find that shocking, and I find that disgusting. And that case is a public case, and anybody can go downtown, and anybody can pull the case. I have pulled the case, and I have it in my possession, and I have read it to you. So I find that unbelievably and discerning, and just don't think this is a good pick for the president. As far as the things we were talking about or I was listening to with the prison, I just want to say when it comes to Rikers that I feel like I'm listening to Alice in Wonderland when I hear people tell me that if we just tear down the prison, that all of these issues are going to go away. They're not going to go away because the prison walls and the brick and the mortar, that is not what is hurting the prisoners. What's hurting the prisoners is bad management and lack of funding. And so all you're doing is transferring the same problem into four other buildings. I think it's four other buildings in different locations. And I wonder what the property is really going to be used for, because this is not happening. Nothing ever happens because of people's caring about prisoners or anything like that. They care about real estate. And so that real estate is valuable. It must be worth something. There must be somebody that wants that land very, very badly. And that is why they're going to close down Rikers and put it into different places. And if you speak to the people that live in the places like South Bronx, they're not too thrilled about having another prison in their neighborhood. They're not too thrilled about having prisons built in most of these neighborhoods, because most of these neighborhoods are not the, they already have enough on their hands, enough on their plate. And I think that it's a terrible misuse of our tax dollars. I think if you empty the prison out of the people that are nonviolent, and just that's what the plan is anyway, by the way, then you would see a big difference right there when you lessen the population. And I also think that you need to start new with different employees and a different kind of discipline for the employees that work there. There are people that work there that think it's a lot of fun to have gladiator fights with the inmates. They think that's great entertainment, and I think that absolutely can't be tolerated. But I don't really think that changing the brick and mortar of any place is going to change what's happening. We've heard people like Cory Booker talk about this. I mean, the unbelievable craziness of tearing down entire buildings, these projects, and saying, well, if we just tear these projects down, all of these problems are going to disappear. They will not disappear. But what will disappear is the housing units that we have for people that can't afford to live in market rate housing. That's what we lose. We lose housing. And that is what they did lose. So you cause more displacement, more homelessness, instead of taking care of these buildings. I mean, the buildings aren't failing because of the people. They're failing because of the lack of funding to go to the repairs and to making the buildings work and be safe and updated. I mean, it just is common sense. And I'm sorry, but I don't believe in fairy tales. So I don't believe that if you tear down a building, that you're going to change anything about what goes on inside of the building. The sickness is in the people's minds and heads that are running these places. It's not in the bricks and in the mortar. And until we, lift up and start looking at that, I don't think we're going to see any kind of change. And the last comment I want to make is that I've been listening to people talk about the elections all day. And it's pretty interesting. When I listened to the public advocate, I remember so many people, when I went to every Democratic club to speak when I was running for the public advocate, I was not allowed to speak as if I had some kind of message. It was so profane that the walls are going to fall down. So I was handled like botulism at these Democratic clubs, and it was very, very disappointing because most of the candidates that I was able to see were, I don't know, some of them were borderline on absolute craziness. I mean, I couldn't even believe they were allowed to get up there and take all that time. And yet I was not allowed to speak. But, you know, I think we are where we are because not only do we have people that just don't come out and vote, but we don't have people that run. It's very, very hard to run for office. And it's also really hard among your peers. I mean, the left wing can be harder on anybody. Lefties can be so unbelievably hard on people that are also left just trying to get and make a difference because the cynicism is so thick and it is so hard to overcome that, you know, a person feels like bogged down before they even get up to open their mouth to say the first thing. And I think that that cynicism is something that really holds us back. And although we have to know what's going on and we have to have truth and facts, we also need to have a light at the end of the tunnel. We have to have a solution for these problems instead of just being bogged down with identifying the problems. It seems that we've identified so many problems, but we don't identify solutions. And then when somebody comes up and they want to try something, we're so quick to point out, well, you know, you don't have this, you don't have that. I mean, to me, I went to see Bernie Sanders a couple weeks ago, and I saw there were thousands of people there. And there were thousands of people that were all in their 20s and 30s. I could count on my hand the people that were my age. And I felt so inspired by this audience. And I also felt inspired when I heard this man speak. I always feel inspired when I hear him speak because it sounds hopeful to me. He doesn't sound like some pedophile creep monster that's up there that's going to do everything he can to, you know, steal the money from the people and do all kinds of demonic things. So, you know, as much as he might not fit the bill for everything that everyone wants, and I don't know of anybody that could do that, even in your life, even when you get married and you love that person will not have everything you want. I still think that there are some good things out on the horizon that maybe we could focus some of our attention on instead of constantly focusing on what we don't have and trying to create things that we don't have from grassroots up. You know, if you don't like the candidate, then run and be the candidate. And I know that that's very, very hard. But when people are out there also trying to be the candidate and they don't have a lot of money, but they're speaking what you think, maybe, just maybe, it'd be a good thing to get behind them and stop acting like, well, you know, you don't have 100%. Well, you know what? Maybe I have 85% of what you want, and maybe that's a good thing. And that's how I kind of feel about Bernie Sanders. I mean, that at least there's one person that when I walked away, I didn't feel like he was a total piece of shit. I feel like that when I listen to the city council. I feel like it's just another trick. Even this you know, the ranked choice voting, it's funny because it is on my website. It is something I have supported. But, you know, as soon as it came out on the ballot today, all I could think of is what's the trick? Because there's always a trick here. And, you know, I'm very cynical myself, too. I really get so disappointed when I see the things that get put out there. We put a bill out there called the Tenant Anti-Harassment Bill, which is a total load of nonsense. It's anything but anti-harassment. But they put a beautiful name on it, and then they basically close the doors for any kind of a way for a tenant to make a landlord responsible for harassing them. And so we see this all the time, and I know it's very hard to not be cynical, but I don't see how we're going to change and make this a better place if we don't have some balance here. And that means, yeah, let's identify the bad stuff, but let's also get behind candidates that are trying to do the right thing and also be the candidates. If you think that you can do a better job, then be the candidate. Get in there. Do something. I mean, right now we don't have any other way of governing the United States except for that what we have in front of us. And I just think that all the cynicism just adds to more losing. And I'll just leave you with this. You know, one of the things I've always noticed in life is when there's a win, there's another win. And it's just like once one battle gets won, another one can be won on top of it. So I think that if we have our mind more in that set, we might do better with some of the causes we're trying to defend and go after. I'll leave it with that.
Thank you so much for that, Gwen Goodwin. And I must say, Gwen Goodwin was the only candidate that I would consider voting for. No, I campaigned for Gwen Goodwin as the advocate for the city of New York because she is honest. You're going to hear what the issues are. And I must say to people, when I first met this young woman, it was around schools, school buildings, and I felt bad for her. And I said to Lynn Stewart, I says, this young white woman has made it her issue to end corruption in Harlem. And I said, she's in big trouble. And I felt sorry for her until I met her husband, Peter, an ex-Marine who loved her. I says, oh, she's okay. He'll take care of her. But she's taken on a big job. He understood the job that she had taken on, the system that she went after, and it's a system of total corruption. But with your help, with our help, the next position that becomes available to Gwen runs for, let's increase her committee, her election committee, for those who know her and hear her speak on issues. Thanks again for that, Gwen. I'll see you next week. And next up is our dear sister, political prisoner advocate, Ann Lamb. Ann, your mic is open.
Hey, Ralph. Good evening. Here we are talking
good
to
evening.
Each other again.
Right,
we had such
we
a lovely weekend in D.C., right? With the Black
right
and Fat Coalition. That was a fantastic rally and conference. I am very inspired. I have received, and I'm going to read, this ridiculous, I have to say, completely ununderstandable decision by the parole board in the case of our friend Jaleel, also known, or known in docs as Anthony Bottom, because he had a 3.5-hour parole hearing, okay? Now, you know in those 3.5 hours, they talked about a lot of things. And they reduced this to 3 pages, basically, of nature of the crime, right? Which, you know, it's ridiculous. Some things are never going to change. You can't change the nature of your crime, right? You can't change your past, right? So this is very, very extremely convoluted. That's the word I was looking for. It's a convoluted decision. All right. Parole decision denied, hold for 12 months, next appearance date September 2020. After an overall review of the record, an extensive personal interview, and due deliberation, it is determination of the panel that your release at this time remains incompatible with the welfare and safety of society and would still so deprecate your offense as to undermine respect for the law. You stand convicted of 2 counts of degreeless murder by way of verdict in New York County. The instant offense involved your actions in concert with your co-defendants, where you approached 2 New York City police officers from behind without notice and shot them several times. Each officer sustained a gunshot wound to the head and throughout their bodies, causing their subsequent deaths. As the mortally wounded officers laid on the ground, you and your co-defendants removed their service weapons from their holsters and fled the scene. According to your statements made during your parole eligibility interview, and we don't know if this is true or not, you fled to a location in the Bronx, New York, where you finalized your escape. The stolen police service weapon belonging to one officer, along with your firearm, was placed in the mail via the United States Postal Service and mailed to a location in the state of California. You flew to California and retrieved the weapons. In fact, when you were apprehended by law enforcement officers in California, you had in your possession the stolen service weapon of the murdered New York City police officer to which the service weapon belonged. Your instant offense represents your only term of New York State incarceration. Although you maintained your innocence for many years, you now acknowledge your role in the instant offense. However, your criminal engagements in California are extensive and also include crime against law enforcement. You have demonstrated a continuation of negative behaviors that began during adolescence and escalated quickly thereafter. The panel has considered your age at the time of the incident offense, you was 19, and the external factors in the community that may have influenced your impulsive reactions. In addition, the panel notes the adverse challenges you endured during your formative years that have created a certain level of vulnerability for you. We don't know what they mean by this. Nobody does, okay, including Jaleel and his mom. Nonetheless, in determining your suitability for release to the community, consideration has been given to your COMPAS risk and needs assessment. Your COMPAS indicates low scores for risk of felony violence, arrest risk, abscond risk, criminal involvement, history of violence, and prison misconduct, among other low-risk indicators. However, the panel departs from the COMPAS risk and needs assessment because you come across as still believing in the righteousness of your crime and because your remorse lacks the depth that is necessary to give your low risk of reoffending the necessary weight to overcome the remaining standards that this panel finds you still fall far short of. In addition, the panel has considered your appropriate case plan. You highlighted several goals, tasks, and activities to support your level of rehabilitation. These goals are in further support of your engagement in DOC's recommended programs. Moreover, consideration was given to your sentencing minutes, extensive level of community support, and letters of assurance. Your letters of support are from several family members, including your mother. Additional support letters are from individuals in the community, academia, civic organizations, professionals, advocates, and elected officials. The panel acknowledges, however, receipt of as many or more letters in opposition to your release. These are the PBA letters. These letters of opposition are extensive, and they have been submitted from community members, civic organizations, professionals, law enforcement, and elected officials, all of which have been considered as well. Your course of conduct in targeting law enforcement officers across several jurisdictions concerns this panel. This panel is equally concerned about your other criminal engagements and violent crimes. You appear to have gained insight into the factors that contributed to your feelings, thoughts, and behaviors that fueled your reaction to your environment and subsequent negative behaviors, and the panel applauds you for that growing insight. You have improved your discipline over the years and have demonstrated pro-social behaviors by following the rules of the facility. As such, you have not received additional misbehavior reports since your last board appearance. In addition, the panel acknowledges the advances you have made in acquiring educational achievements as evidenced by 2 undergraduate college degrees and several certificates of completion from various programs. However, discretionary relief shall not be granted merely as a reward for good conduct or efficient performance of duties while confined. Further, the panel concludes that a release is not appropriate. A release at this time would so deprecate the seriousness of the offense as to undermine respect for the law. And this was, as I say, a unanimous decision. Now, this is like pretty amazing stuff as far as I'm concerned. I read this, and I read this 5 times, and I was like, okay, what are they saying, right, aside from the nature of the crime is what it comes down to. Now, there is some pending laws, I should say laws, they're only pending in both the Senate and the Assembly of New York State, which is called the Presumptive Parole Bill, which would no longer allow the parole board to use this language. It would be presumed that a person would be granted release as long as they, you know, did all their programs and docs, complied with everything, and did not have any, you know, infractions. Fine. That has not yet become the law. That is, you know, still floating around up there in that cesspool that we call Albany. So that is one thing. The other thing is that at Jaleel's request, as I mentioned last week, we have reactivated our campaign to Governor Cuomo, demanding, I would say, I'm not requesting anymore, I'm demanding that he commute Jaleel's sentence to time served. The man was sentenced to 25 to life. He's done more than 48 years. He was originally captured in August 28, 1971. Okay? And look where we are now in 2019. So that is a very, very long time to stay in prison. I know Ralph, you and Sister Betty met Jaleel. You know how he is. Very educated person. very funny person, you know, totally rehabilitated person. He's busy mentoring young people in the prisons. You know, he's taught I don't know how many hundreds of people to read and write, get their GEDs, et cetera, et cetera. You know, he's always encouraging people to not recidivate. You know, when you get out of here, don't come back, right, which is very important. So they're not looking at any of that, obviously, because if the so-called COMPAS risk assessment is low on every level, that they're supposed to abide by the COMPAS risk assessment. This is the second time in a row that they said they're departing from the COMPAS, right? So this is a serious, serious problem. And, you know, the governor has the power to commute your real sentence. And we will not forget that the governor did grant clemency to Judy Clark. Then she went to the parole board and they acted as if none of that had ever happened and they denied her. And then when she went back the second time after that, she did get released. So, you know, he can do it if he had any political will to do it, which he, of course, does not. But if we keep the heat on, you know, possibly he might do it. And so we're encouraging everybody to write to the governor, call the governor, tweet the governor, email the governor, right? There's certain days of the week you can do one thing or the other. Get all your friends and family and coworkers and religious friends, wherever you belong to any group, to do the same. So that's up on jerichony.org. That's jerichony.org, jerichony.org. It's up at thejerichomovement.com. So the information is there. I will also be posting the decision itself at Jalil's request. And I would really encourage everybody with any level of consciousness to do this. Because if you can, I mean, it would be hard to imagine, I think, for most of us, spending 48 years in prison, okay, and also still being, you know, perfectly intact in your mind, right, and keeping up with current events. And Jalil is also a writer and blogger. He hasn't been doing as much of that lately because the lawyers have, you know, his lawyers have wanted him to keep a sort of low profile, hoping that that would, you know, help in his endeavor to get out the door. Doesn't seem to have made much of a difference. And so we really need, we the community, you know, they're in there for us, as I say. So we're out there, we're out here for them, right? If it weren't for our freedom fighters, we would not have many of the minor privileges that we currently have. So it behooves us, you know, if they can make major sacrifice, and every single one of them has made major sacrifice, we can certainly take 5 or 10 minutes to write a letter and put it in the mail or to email it to the governor and then also put it in the mail or to tweet the governor if you tweet, you know, it's not a big deal to do. So there is a brochure. It lists a lot of Jalil's accomplishments over the years. So, you know, you have a basis on which to write a letter if you don't personally know Jalil. Anybody who personally knows Jalil should certainly be doing this. Any of the more than 1,000 people who have visited him over the years should all be doing this, you know. And, you know, if we do a united push and we get as many people as possible involved behind it, and the governor starts getting inundated, not only by people in New York, which he should be, people nationally and internationally, you know, it could happen. It could happen. So we really need to do this, you know, and really push to try to get at least one of our freedom fighters home. His co-defendant is out. So you see the logic has nothing to do with it. Because logically, if two people were involved in committing the same crime, you would assume they would get released at the same time with the same sentence, right? So there's that to consider. There's no logic behind parole board decisions. It's a crapshoot. A lot of it depends on who you get as the commissioners. Some of them have been known for years, you know, to be horribly, you know, they're PBA members or they're former members, they're former cops. They're members of the Detectives Endowment Association. There's one who's an active member of the Fraternal Order of Police. You know, you don't get to decide who's going to be your commissioners. So you might get the same ones over and over who have already voted against you more than once. So there's a lot of corruption as we're talking about corruption. There's a lot of corruption in the cesspool in Albany, the other swamp. There's a lot of collusion here going on between the governor's office and the parole board, which is not supposed to happen, right? And so I would encourage everybody to really take up this task and just do it, man. Just do it. And if you have any friends like-minded, say, look, maybe you don't know him, but here he is. This is who he is. This is what he's done. This is what he continues to do. Why don't you sit down and at least tweet the governor and say, I demand commutation of sentence for Anthony Bottom, number 778-4283. It wouldn't be so hard. And, you know, if it's a coordinated campaign, which is what we're planning to do, then, you know, on certain days of the week, he gets all these tweets and he's like, oh, put your foot. And then on certain other days of the week, he starts receiving all these letters and emails and faxes. Then he's like, oh, maybe I possibly might have to do something about this. But of course, if we don't do anything, nothing will happen. And that applies to all our political prisoners. You know, we have had some successes. We've seen a lot of people walk out the doors in these past couple of years. We are extremely ecstatic about that. But we still have a lot of people inside the walls that we have to pull out of there. And as I said on the weekend, and it is true, you know, in the coming years, we're going to have many more political prisoners. Because as this system crumbles, hopefully, quickly, but it is slowly crumbling and deteriorating already, you know, it's going to get a lot harder to fight against it. That's why we have impending fascism, which is not impending, as George Jackson said many years ago, fascism is here, all right? So, you know, we have to deal with these things. You've got to think about our children and their children and their children. You know, what kind of future are we building for, you know, future generations who are just now being born? And, you know, that's a serious, serious thought to have. So, you know, if you don't want your grandkids to be going to prison because they stood up against this system, maybe you better do something now to make sure that this system no longer exists by the time your grandchildren are adults. And I still say, what's the call? Free them all.
Free them all. Well, yep. Thank you so much for that. And during the week, we had a great conference where Ann Lamb, Sister Ann, and Sister Betty spoke so eloquently about our struggle for liberation. And we will have on this program, we have recorded it. You will hear what they had to say. And if I might say, I participated in this event, and one of my themes was to speak clearly. And when we speak clearly, people can understand. We say police, but we mean army of occupation. Jaleel Montequim took up arms against the army of occupation. And the crime is the crime of the New York City Police Department, because when these two representatives of the Army of Occupation, which Lynn Stewart said, fellows in blue, the blue line that opposes us, that keeps our communities in the positions that they are in, that protects the wealth of this society, this army of occupation did not respect the member of color. When the incident happened, and I'm talking about the shooting of the two police officers of New York City wearing the blue, when the policeman came, they turned the black officer over with their foot and picked up the white officer and rushed to the hospital. The crime is the crime of the racist New York City Police Department. Nobody told me that. I was there. I break my silence this evening. 47 years is too long. We are punishing the wrong people. And those who understand the condition of imperialism and colonialism on the communities of color in America had better stand up. We have to go after those congressmen, cowardly congressman in Washington to say stop and free all of our political prisoners because you are merely protecting a system of oppression that is divided up to work against people of color and the poor. You've heard it on this program over and over again. And if you think they're upset about the death of those wearing the blue, they're upset about one of those wearing the blue. I repeat, they turned the black officer over with their foot and picked up the white officer and rushed off to the hospital. Tell me about the crime of those who are defending their community against this racist system that uses its army of occupation in the colonies of Harlem, the Lower East Side, Iraq, Afghanistan, Vietnam, and the world around them to protect wealth. Let us remember that when we talk about crime, we have to support those who saw the truth of our existence and fought against it, and stop allowing those puppets, those, and I'm emotional here, those people such as Cuomo who want to run for office. We must promise them opposition if they dare run, if they do not support our political prisoners and freedom. I'm not going to continue. We have Sister Shirley up next. Sister Shirley, what is the number? 1-885. Your mic is open.
You're saying you're affected. This hearing all of this has my stomach in knots because I'm just sick and tired of this. You know, it doesn't make any sense. And I really do appreciate so much when you have people here who have shared what they know and put it into words, and I really thank you all, like Nellie Bailey and Tom and Professor Louis. It's so sickening. It doesn't make any sense. And I understand that we have this system and everything, and some people think all we have to do is vote. That's not true. The bottom line is this system is working exactly the way it's supposed to be working. Mm-hmm. Bottom line, it's done that by design. And getting rid of Rikers Island, yes, we need to get rid of Rikers Island and not build any other Rikers Islands or small jails, because most of those people don't belong in the jails in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? The bottom line. And it is against black and Latinos and sisters and brothers, brown and black, and we have to acknowledge that. And it's not enough to say, hey, you know what? I've been asked, okay, well, if you feel this way, do that, then run. I'm not going to be a part of a system that doesn't work in the first place. And it's sad to say that, you know, Trump got in because of this. But bottom line is, if Hillary was doing like she needed to do, if the Democrats, which I am one, sorry to say, if we did what they needed to do, this it wouldn't have happened. And we had already gotten to the point where we'd said the lesser of the two evils when it came to the Democrats and the Republicans. But when Hillary came in, and I said Hillary, when she came in, and when Trump came in, right, we had either HIV on one side or cancer on the other. So people didn't want either one of them. So people, they chose not to even vote or to vote for somebody else, like Jill Stein and the Green Party. And then there were some people who weren't even allowed to vote.
Right.
So, I mean, no, the voting is not the answer all. But I do believe that we have to do something in the interim. We do need a revolution, bottom line. Because this system sucks. But we have to work together. And the major problem that I have that's happening with us is we're not working together. And I know that the system did a really good job, a great job on dividing us. I mean, the Willie Lynch is still happening.
Yeah.
It didn't stop when it just came from, you know, back in the slave days when they turned us against each other and we had to be able to look at him and at the master and feel like, hey, you know what, he's the end all and everything. I mean, there were house niggas who cared more for the master than the master cared for himself. And we did turn against each other. First it was the blacks, the darker skinned ones against the light skinned ones. And then, I mean, even with the Caribbeans and the Africans, they were told that the blacks here, they were lazy and they didn't want to work. And they were given more opportunities than we got here. I know so many black people from Africa and Caribbean, they still feel that, you know, the ones here are lazy and they don't want to work. But a lot of black people, they don't even realize how strong we are. I mean, we are strong people. Do you know how many people don't even know about Black Wall Street? I mean, it's unreal, and even Central Park. But instead of us coming together like we need to, and we really do need to, and if it wasn't for my brother, and I'm going to say it again, and if I haven't said it, then and if anybody don't understand or remember who I'm talking about, then you should be ashamed of yourself. And I'm talking about our black Latino son from another mother, Ramsey Orta. He is the one who took that video of his friend being modern-day lynched to death by that killer cop, Pantaleo. And he's the one who's in jail. And then we have these false leaders. And unfortunately, a lot of people still look at this leader as a leader, this man as a leader. And I'm talking about Sharp Ass. If those of you don't know who I'm talking about Sharpton. And you know what? He knew about the second one who was choked to death here on Staten Island in 2002. And he did not support him, and he did not let us know about him. And there's still people on Staten Island who still don't know about the second and the first one. And the reason why he didn't do anything, because he couldn't get them to roll with him the way he wanted them to roll. And he destroyed the Gardner family. I mean, he has hurt so many different families. And we need to come together and not say, hey, you know what? This is the sharp ass syndrome. I made it up. Feel free to use it. It goes like this. Don't worry about it. I got this. This is mine. Not only do we have the sharp ass syndrome in the person, but we also have it in organizations. And there's another organization I'm calling out. Yes, I am. And that's the Justice Committee or whatever what crap they want to call themselves. They're not working with us, working together. We need to be together because it's not about me. It's not about all these different families that have had the cops kill their family. It's not about the climate. It's not about the immigrants. It's about all of it because the system is doing this to us. They know what they're doing. It's done by design, and it's in divide and conquer. We're doing it to ourselves, and we do need to come together so much because tomorrow is definitely not promised, and we have to come together and make this work, and we can do this. We can
do it. Yes, we can.
Just don't give up on each other. Okay.
Well, thank you so much for that, Sister Shirley. I know of the great work you've done over the years, and when you bring up the names that should be brought up, Mr. Orta, why isn't there a movement to support Mr. Orta, whose only crime was telling the truth? But why should we be surprised about that? His crime is telling the truth. On the local level, we have Snowden, who's running for his life because he told the truth. We have Julian Assange, who's incarcerated because he told the truth. We have our wonderful Lynn Stewart, who told the truth, who asked a question of Emad Salem when she said in the courtroom with Judge Mukasey, who later became Attorney General of the United States, who told her not to ask the question, and she asked the question of Emad Salem. And the question was, are you in contact with the FBI? And the answer was yes. Did you tell the FBI that the materials that the people had for World Trade Center 1 was going to blow up? He answered yes. And she says, what did they say to you? And the judge cleared the courtroom and said it has nothing to do with this case, the case of the Landmarks case. And she said it has to do with the credibility of the witness in the Landmarks case, Sheikh Omar Abdel Rahman. The witness against him was a liar, but he was afraid that he had no one to trust, because they say on the witness stand, if you lie, you will be prosecuted. And he looked at the judge, and he didn't know whether to trust the judge. He didn't know whether to trust the FBI. He knew he couldn't trust the FBI because he recorded every conversation they had. And when we found that out, Lynn Stewart asked the question, when you told the American FBI that the World Trade Center 1, that the implements that the so-called terrorist had was going to blow up, what did they tell you? What did the FBI tell Emad Salem? And he repeated it in that courtroom, and it's on the court record. Emad Salem, they told me to shut my mouth. Lynn Stewart says, they told you to shut your mouth. Emad Salem answered, they told me to shut my mouth. And Lynn Stewart was in trouble, not only from there, but for her support of people of color. In the courtroom, in the arena of law, to give people of color excellent representation. That was her crime, and I think it hit a high point when she supported Larry Davis on self-defense. She became public enemy number one to this system when she told the truth. When I jump forward to many years and visiting her in prison, and she had said to me on the phone the day of the visit, don't be shocked when you see me. Cancer was destroying her. The picture was out. I published the picture of that visit. And when I looked at her, she said to me, well, I'm better off than you. My hair might come back and yours never will. She made light of it. But in that prison, they intended to kill herself because it was a death camp, because she was a political prisoner who told the truth. And Mr. Orta told the truth, and he's getting the treatment of all of those who have told the truth throughout history in this here America. Hypocrisy, America, is thy name. And so this program that we have this evening is archived. You can go to this program at any time. Let me take a step back. You can go to this program until they take the program down. This whole thing of the website and of information that is being used by people is being shut down. We see Black Agenda Report as so many of our other truth tellers. We have a meeting, and I've been told that I could go on and on, but we have a meeting with WBAI. What's happening with BAI? Join the liberation struggle. And is anyone here going to announce when the BAI meetings are being held? Go ahead, Victor.
The few upcoming meetings we have will be on Wednesday, 6th, right? 2:30 p.m., Court Street.
Court,
71 Thomas at West Broadway, room 314. 6:30 p.m., Fight Back MTG meeting, 1199 Martin Luther King Center, 310 West 43rd, between 8th and 9th. 7 p.m., LSB meeting at YWCA, 33rd Avenue, Brooklyn.
Okay, Victor, we're having a little problem reading those things. WBAI, pay attention to when we have meetings, and all of you, please show up because we have much work to do. Good night, my brothers and sisters. We covered a lot. We will see you next week, and remember, it's all archived.